right? And you find that entrepreneurs often play, you know, a variety of roles within the company mm-hmm. that they're starting or trying to start. And so that alone with the pressure that comes with it. And then it's often tied into something that's very personal to you, right? So it's a dream you've always had or if it's something you've always wanted to do.
Right.
It's not just a business, right? It's sort of tied into who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about the fact that, like you said, it fails, right? It's much bigger than just a business failing. It's sort of hit at the core of who you are.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Item 13, a bi-weekly podcast covering everything African food, and I'm your host, Yom Tego. Every other week, we'll delve into the world of African food, chefs, curators, and bloggers. I hope you enjoy it. This week, I explore the topic of mental health in the context of entrepreneurs in the African food space. I speak to Dr. Carol Mathias-Ushers, a psychologist who is passionate about helping people thrive in all areas of their life. With a doctorate and master's in educational psychology and a Bachelor of Arts in psychology, her in-depth knowledge of learning and teaching provides an understanding of how people think, learn, and behave. She works with clients battling with depression, anxiety disorders, suicide ideation, among other mental illnesses. She's passionate about mental health awareness, changing the perceptions and stigma attached to mental health, and demystifying therapy. She's currently the in-house psychologist at SOS Herman Miner College in Accra, Ghana, heading their emotional counseling department. This was a great conversation, and while a lot of the resources we discussed are relevant to those in Ghana or Accra, I encourage you to research local resources available to you if any of the topics we discussed resonate with you. Also, a note that none of the advice offered in this episode is a substitute for proper care from a licensed health professional. Here's our conversation. So welcome to the show, Carol. Excited to have you on. Excited to talk about mental health with regard to food entrepreneurs specifically. I think we've done a lot of conversations around sort of skills and tools like PR and marketing, and we've interviewed entrepreneurs on their journeys. But I think one of the things that we overlook is that mental health piece. And so I thought mm-hmm. having an expert like yourself join us and talk about that would be great. So I'm excited to have you on, and we'll see where this conversation goes.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I think we'll enjoy this.
Yeah, I think this should be good. So we'll start with you telling us a little bit about yourself. So your background, how you sort of ended up in this space of mental health counseling, etc.
Okay. All right. So, well, I guess I'll start. I'm Ghanaian, you know, raised in Ghana up until secondary school, went to Achimota School, and then left to the United States to do a degree. At the time, you know, I had sort of like a vague interest in psychology. Wasn't really sure if that's what I wanted to pursue, but, you know, sort of after in my junior year, I was pretty sure after taking a couple of classes, I was like, okay, this is me. I can see myself doing this. And so I got an undergraduate degree in psychology and then went ahead to do a master's to sort of qualify to be a clinical psychologist.
Yeah.
And then decided to sort of take it a bit further and specialize in educational psychology. So I did a PhD in educational psychology.
Oh my God.
And so I spent 11 years doing that. But not just a PhD, so a total, you know, from undergrad to the end of my PhD program was about 11, 12 years.
That's crazy.
Ended up living in Atlanta for about 13, 14 years. Moved back to Ghana in 2015, September 2015, and just sort of got into the mental health scene in Ghana. I've always been interested in people. You know, I've always been interested in helping people. people sort of gravitate towards me for advice,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sort of direction and, you know, solutions to problem. I seem to connect well with people easily. And so psychology really was sort of like a natural fit. Not to say that it's been smooth sailing, but,
yeah.
you know, and then definitely after moving back home and getting a greater appreciation for the mental health care scene in Ghana, you know, it sort of boosted my passion even more.
Yeah.
So being that it's such a young field, and mental health care in Ghana really sort of has a long way to go. And so that has fueled my passion even more.
Yeah, because I was actually going to ask you about that. So I feel like after, you know, having all of that U.S. experience and probably there's some mm-hmm. sort of excitement to coming, you know, back home for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
and you come home, mm-hmm. like, what is the landscape like? Because I don't remember, I mean, and you have specifically an interest in educational psychology, which we can go into a little bit deeper
right.
a little bit, but mm-hmm. even just from a general, like, mental health
mm-hmm.
field, I just don't think it's, and like you alluded to, it's not one, probably not as mature, and I don't even know like if culturally, and maybe mm-hmm. more so now with the, you know, the upcoming, you know, generation, younger generation, it's maybe more acceptable,
right.
but even then I think that there's still a certain cultural stigma, right, with
definitely
with asking for help with that stuff. So what was your initial experience when you first came, and were you looking for a job or were you just looking to start your own thing right away?
Well, I think sort of like in a foolhardy sort of way, I was looking to start my own thing.
Okay.
I'm going to come back home. I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to, you know, change the world, which a part of me still has that, but you know, Ghana, as much as it's home and as much as we love Ghana, you know, Ghana will sort of bring you back to reality very quickly. But, you know, the biggest thing with mental health still in Ghana is the stigma.
Yeah.
Right. I would say the stigma that's attached to mental health. And so that sort of comes from a lack of understanding of mental health and how mental health is different from mental illness, for example.
Right.
And then also, you know, a lot of stigmatization that's attached to, you know, the different mental illnesses that we have. For a lot of people in Ghana, mental health or mental illness, we immediately think of, you know, the naked people we
walking
see
walking on the street.
On the
yeah,
street,
exactly.
You know, and that's that. You know, it's a whole range
right.
of things.
Yeah.
And so the stigma, and then also I think the other big issue here in Ghana is access to care, the availability of care, and then access to care. So I came sort of wanting to do something on my own, but then quickly realizing that, okay, you probably need to really get your feet wet, try and find somewhere to plant yourself, and then sort of take off from there.
Okay.
But, you know, I come and then I find I have to sort of, the good thing is we have a regulatory body now called the Ghana Psychological Council.
Oh, okay.
You have to register, you have to stay registered, licensed with them in order to practice in Ghana.
Okay.
And so I went through the whole process of registering with them. It was a little long because I was US trained,
mm-hmm.
But getting licensed here and then sort of really starting to work. But before I worked with SOS, I sort of did some contract jobs here and there. One with Newmont Ghana, which was quite interesting, and then Christian International High School. I think it's in Dodowa.
Okay.
So it was just as a way of getting my feet wet.
Right.
And sort of figuring out what was happening on the scene. But it was a bit of a shock because coming from a place like the U.S. where,
yeah.
you know, as much as there's still stigma attached to mental health, by way of mental health professionals, it's a very organized profession.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, by way of industry or profession, it's pretty much organized. In Ghana, they are sort of still, we're still getting our acts together.
but
you know, which is a good thing,
yeah.
but it was a bit of a change for me.
Right.
So those were my struggles,
okay.
you know, in making the transition,
yeah.
right.
And then, so now you've said you work for SOS, but then you also
mm-hmm.
ended up doing your own thing, right? So you run Thrive
yes.
Care. So how did you,
yes.
make the leap into sort of doing your own thing? And why did you decide to do that in addition to what you do full-time or with your day job, I guess?
Okay, so I've been at SOS 3 years now. Five okay. Care is new. Five Care was birthed in 2018.
Oh, okay.
And I love my job at SOS, and it's primarily sort of taking care of the emotional and mental health needs of the students and mm-hmm. staff over there. And I love it. But then in talking to people and sort of settling into Ghana, every time I would talk to people, you know, the response sort of I would get back from people was, you know, a range of things. So it's like people not really understanding what psychologists do, mm-hmm. what therapy is, what counseling is. So that it's sort of the stigma, and then it's sort of shrouded in some mystery, you know. It's like, we're not really sure what you do,
right.
You know. So then I sort of had this idea of sort of putting myself out there and sort of taking, you know, the very complicated theoretical stuff in psychology and then breaking it down like in a way that people can use, you know, practical everyday ways to better their lives. And so I sort of took the, before that I wasn't on social media, but then it started out sort of like on social media, yeah. Instagram, Twitter, and I would just put information out there, like things that I thought people would find helpful,
mm-hmm.
because I knew and interacted with people that, you know, not everyone can afford, most people can't afford therapy. Most people can't afford to sit down one-on-one, either yeah. weekly or bi-weekly with a therapist. But it doesn't mean that they don't need help.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, if I can just put stuff out there that I think people will find useful, then, you know, then I feel like, okay, I'm doing my bit in my little small corner
yeah,
of the world.
To help, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But then when I tell you that as soon as that started, like the response was almost overwhelming.
Mm.
And even though I knew people needed help, it was like the response I got, I get DMs, you know, so many DMs right. every day, just people looking for help, struggling with, you know, whether it's depression or anxiety
right.
or grief, or just looking for help, for people who could afford help, sort of not having any idea where to go
right.
to find help. And then for most people, just not being able to afford it. And so it sort of confirmed to me, wow, like there's a great need out there.
Yeah.
Let me use the time I have outside of SOS to, you know, see if I can start providing that help
mm-hmm.
for people who are in a position to get it. And so that's where this idea of Thrive came from.
Okay.
And I decided, okay, let me step out and sort of set up my own practice and go from there. So what happened is that I worked in collaboration with a clinic called Acre City Medics in Airport City. You know, they provide specialized medical care, but then they set up a psychology unit, and I work in partnership with them. So I'm still doing my social media stuff, still putting stuff out there, but then I registered a company, and so it became official,
yeah.
and then, like, it's been good. So it's been since March of this year. Well, it became official sort of in May, but yeah, so earlier on in the year I decided
okay.
to just add on to what I was doing at SOS and just provide whatever help I can.
Okay.
Basically.
No, that all sounds great. And I mean, I can't even imagine where you find the time to do all of that. But I think that sounds great. And even from what you're sharing, it sounds like it's a major need, and that people
yeah.
that need that resource and they need that the expertise to help them walk through some of the challenges that they face that they can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And so before we dive into specifically what challenges like entrepreneurs face, I wanted
mm-hmm.
to talk to
mm-hmm.
through what the different components of a mental health care consists of, right? So you talked a little bit about, and I think even layman's like trying to understand the difference between a psychologist versus a psychiatrist, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think also some concerns people have about, you know, starting to see someone for depression might be, you know, will they put
mm-hmm.
me on pills, for example, and
will I
be numbing my true feelings, etc. So I wanted to understand the scope of services. So whoever is listening that may be interested also can understand, you know, it could be something simple from just having therapy sessions, like conversation sessions to medical, you know,
mm-hmm.
that full range of potential services.
Okay. Okay. Well, psychology is psychology on its own, you know, provides a wide range,
mm-hmm.
right? Anywhere you can basically think of, whether it's human activity, you know, there's some specialization in psychology. So like I said before, you can, most psychologists are clinical psychologists. So they've completed a master's program in clinical psychology. They've done some practical hours and they're sort of ready and trained to provide therapy. I'll go back and sort of talk about the difference between therapy and counseling in a minute. But I think for most people, they find the difference between psychiatry and psychology a little confusing, right? So psychiatrists are medical doctors. They go through medical school and are trained as medical doctors, right? Whereas psychologists for me have either a master's or a PhD, sort of like in you know whatever area they specialize. Educational psychology, clinical psychology, social psychology, there's even sex psychology, sports psychology, health psychology, right? And so what that boils down to, one of the main differences is psychiatrists can prescribe medication because they're medical doctors.
Yeah.
Psychologists can't.
Okay.
Right? A lot of psychologists heal through psychotherapy or counseling or different forms of what we call talk therapy.
Okay.
Right? Whereas psychiatrists can also do therapy, but they can prescribe medications. And so you'll find that in a lot of cases, psychologists and psychiatrists work together.
Okay.
Because whereas, you know, psychiatrists are more interested in sort of like the biological components of an illness, psychologists are looking more at, you know, behavioral aspects. And sort of learn behavior and how the environment sort of also plays into it and things like that. So there's a lot of overlap, but the main difference would be that psychiatrists are medical doctors can prescribe medication. Right. As a psychologist, I can't prescribe medication.
Okay.
And so if I'm working with you and I diagnose you to have, let's say, you know, severe anxiety or you're clinically depressed and, you know, it's part of your treatment plan would be medication. We would have to work with a psychiatrist who would then be able to prescribe the medication for you.
Okay.
Right. But then I'll talk a little bit about therapy and counseling.
Mm-hmm.
With counseling, you can also get trained specifically to be a counselor, right? You have counseling degrees that don't necessarily involve, you know, getting a PhD or most of them are master's degrees. But you can also get a PhD in counseling. Counseling usually involves short-term talk therapy, right? So you have an issue, you go and you talk to a counselor. It's not as extended as therapy.
Okay.
Psychotherapy usually, you know, involves a much more drawn-out program, treatment plan that you follow, usually in connection with a psychiatrist. Whereas counseling, usually you'll find that like little shorter sort of
like very specific
time periods
episodes,
of work.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that
so those are some of the little differences. Even though there's a lot of overlap. And then in mental health, you have psychiatrists, you have psychologists, you have counselors, you have psychiatric nurses, you have community health nurses. So there's a whole range of professionals that work in mental health.
Okay, no, I think that's a good sort of foundation to build for the discussion we're going to have. So as we talk about the different types of mental health challenges that might face entrepreneurs, people can start to get thinking about, you know, based on what they're feeling or, you know, what they're going through, what is the appropriate level of care that they can access based on what they think is going on with them. So maybe this is we'll take a quick short break, and then when we come back, we'll delve into that topic of mental health with regard to entrepreneurs specifically. Welcome back from the break. I think we're now going to go into specifically talk about entrepreneurs and the challenges that we face, especially, and I want to talk about it in the context of one, food entrepreneurs, and then two, Africans, especially in the context of how we think about mental health,
right.
You know, and the stigma and the challenge that we have with sort of sharing things that we wouldn't necessarily consider an illness, let's say,
right.
And so people don't have that level of comfort in sharing. And I think one of the things that really hit me and hit the food world generally speaking was when Anthony Bourdain, when he passed away, I think it was sometime last year. I think that just, it shocked the world, but I think specifically in the food world, because he just seemed at least on the outside, right, as someone who lived his life to the fullest. You know, he seemed to not have any qualms about what people thought of him, and he just was able to engage with people from all walks of life. And so it was just stunning. To watch that and think, you know, this person that seems so comfortable in his skin, like if who knows what was going on in the background. And so that sort of struck me and actually was one of the reasons why I really wanted to do this.
Yes.
Statistically speaking, like if you talk about the restaurant business specifically, the failure, like, I don't know, they say 95% of restaurants fail. So already that level of pressure on an entrepreneur is just going to be that heavy. So one of the first questions I wanted to tackle is, what are sort of the common health, mental health challenges that you would think like an entrepreneur would face, you know?
Well, I think you sort of alluded to some of them. If you think about some of the immediate pressures that come, the fact that you're literally, I guess you can describe it as, you know, carrying either your dream or company that you start on your back, and everything boils down to you,
right?
And you find that entrepreneurs often play, you know, a variety of roles within the company that they're starting or trying to start. And so that alone with the pressure that comes with it. And then it's often tied into something that's very personal to you. Right, so it's the dream you've always had, or if it's something you've always wanted to do, it's not just a business, right? It's sort of tied into who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about the fact that, like you said, it fails, right? Much bigger than just a business failing. It sort of hits at the core of who you are. Right, and so that pressure alone, I think, leads to a lot of anxiety. With the entrepreneurs I've worked with, there's a sort of high stress, very high stress environment that leads to, you know, a lot of anxiety. This is going to work. If I put myself out there, how are people going to respond? I think it's a great idea, but then I'm putting it out to the world. How are people going to respond? Is it going to work? Is it going to fail? They're usually putting all of their finances into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of depression, and unfortunately, you know, a significant rate of suicide, with the pressure that comes from trying to be an entrepreneur, especially a young entrepreneur.
And I think especially today, again, when I think about our generation, I think that the impact of instant news and social media is also also makes that pressure just that much more significant, in that you're seeing the highlight reel of what people are doing, and you're like, oh my God, this person just, you know, launched this thing, or they just won an award for X, and like I'm sitting here trying to just to get to the next level, and it's not happening. And meanwhile, you don't know how long they've been doing their stuff in the background, but it's so easy to see that highlight reel and think, okay, what's wrong with me, or like, why am I not making progress? And a lot of the entrepreneurs that I've spoken to on this show, like when we talk about the challenges that they face, the number one thing that they say is that feeling of being alone or isolated on this journey has come up again and again and again. So in thinking about this wide range of challenges, maybe we can start to think about what are sort of, even before going to a professional, what are some of the coping mechanisms that people can take on, I guess, to deal with some of these issues?
Okay, well, I think the first thing I usually tell people is, if there's help available, take it, right? If you have people who are willing to sort of help you with different aspects of your business, if it's available to you, then sort of delegate things and trust people to do it. Because sometimes I find, you know, with a couple of entrepreneurs I've spoken to, they sort of have the sense of, if I want things to be done right, then I have to do it myself. And I think part of it goes back to, like I was saying before, this very personal connection they have with their business, right? But there's also been instances where there's help available, delegate so that some of that pressure is eased off of you just a little bit, right? The second thing that I would say is in connection to what you said about social media.
Yeah.
And this just for anyone in general, but especially for entrepreneurs, like you said, recognize that what people are posting are the highlights, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't present a full picture of what is going on or the low points that they've had or the challenges that they're having. I was telling someone recently that I think we do too great a job of looking put together all the time and presenting that to the world, right?
Yeah.
We don't talk enough about our challenges and the things going on in the background. And so just the second thing would be just think about, you know, your social media consumption and the impact that's having on you, and recognizing that people are putting out, you know, the very best of what going on with them. So trying not to use that as a measure for where your business needs to be or how far you should have come by now, or this person is doing that and you're not doing enough. And sort of catching yourself when you find that you're doing that. The third thing I would say is take good care of yourself physically. That always helps with your mental health, right? That we can't separate our physical from our mental, right? It's all one, right? So making sure, and I know for entrepreneurs, the issue of sleep, right? You guys don't get enough rest, but you never rest. You know, go. But keep it in mind that if you want your body and your mind to keep sort of putting out at its optimum, you also have to give it what it needs. And it needs rest. It needs, you know, good nutrition. You need to be eating well. And exercise. So just making sure that you're taking care of your body physically, because that does, we find, for example, that exercise has an amazing impact on our overall mental health, right? So making sure that you're taking care of yourself physically, making sure that you sort of build in moments for you to de-stress. And what sometimes when people think of de-stress, and they think it has to be some long planned out, you know,
self-care situation,
something.
Yeah.
Self, exactly. You know, but it's little things. It's little things. And everyone has, you know, things that sort of feed and take care of their souls, whether it's sitting and having a conversation with, you know, somebody you really, really like, whether it's a family member or a niece or a nephew that just makes you laugh, or watching, you know, I worked with someone once who, you know, the thing for him was watching cat videos on YouTube. So he would, you know, he would take moments in his day and just watch a little video, have a good laugh. And we know when, you know, we literally know that when you laugh, right, you know, certain things are released in your brain that, you know, put you in a better headspace. So finding little things you can do in your day or the week that sort of give you that moment. You know, that was a good feeling. Making sure of finding a way to build that into your day. So those are the sort of the little tips that I would say that, you know, without necessarily seeking professional help, you can do to help improve or lower the amount of stress that you tend to have.
Yeah. So I think for me, one of my challenges, I think, I don't even know what I would call it, is maybe. Decision fatigue is maybe what it is. Like thinking about all the different things that I have to do, and like, I think I want to do
X food thing, right? But in doing this X mm-hmm. food thing, I also need to figure out the marketing piece of it, the branding piece mm-hmm. of it, the media piece of it. Mm-hmm. And it's all stuff mm-hmm. that I'm not necessarily an expert on. So you get, right. I tend to get into this black hole where I start to Google, like, how do you, you know, use Instagram for this? And how do you use Twitter for this? And how, and then you, it starts to get so overwhelming. It's like you're moving away from the core thing that you want to do because of all these other right. things that you have to do. And I, mm-hmm. I'm actually working, a coach, a counselor, a therapist, whatever she wants to call herself. Mm-hmm. And one of the things mm-hmm. we've talked about is finding ways. The strategy you talked about is mm-hmm. finding ways to get back in touch with your why. You know, why are you doing mm-hmm. this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And so that exactly. that has been little things from journaling, making intentional decisions at the end of every day to figure out, you know, what have I accomplished today? Because sometimes I find when I'm right. getting into this black hole, I don't even mm-hmm. realize that, you know, while I'm doing all this 100 million things, I'm actually making little steps towards this bigger goal. But right. I get so caught right. up in it that I'm not actually seeing the steps that are being accomplished. And so one of the tools right. that we talked about was taking a step back, even if it's every day. You know, even if I don't have time to write it, at least taking the time to like stop mm-hmm. and think about, you know, mm-hmm. what did I accomplish? What little step did I accomplish today? And, you know, actually feeling good about it and not getting caught up in all of the little
right.
details.
That's very, very important. You know, going back to the why, trying to connect with that at the time. Why did I start doing this in the first place? Keep going back to that. Excellent too. I call it sort of checking in with yourself at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, like you rightfully said, what did I get done? And then taking a moment to celebrate it, not celebrate yeah, exactly. it like necessarily popping up on the right. campaign, but like patting yourself on the back and saying, hey, Carol, you did this today.
Right.
The other thing that also works is that if what you're trying to accomplish can be broken down into stages, then breaking them down into stages and sort of tackling it stage by stage. Because what we find is that completing one stage sort of gives you the courage and the strength and the vim to sort of tackle
yes,
the next
absolutely,
one,
yes.
as the next stage, as opposed to thinking of it as a whole big thing you have to do. So
exactly.
breaking it down into stages, isolating the different stages and just, you know, tackling them stage by stage. But but the interesting thing is people find that different or a combination of these things, a different combination works for different
yeah.
people, right? And so I tell people, keep trying until you find the thing that works for you or the combination of things that works for you.
Exactly.
Because, you know, what works for me might not necessarily work for you, and what works for you might not necessarily work for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because one of the things that, you know, when I was been trying to, you know, deal with or cope with the different sort of things I'm working through, mm-hmm. I always sort of, when I was reading about it, at least, I was always heard, you know, that thing about, you know, working out will make you feel better. And for me, mm-hmm. like my specific problem was just having so many things and decisions to make. And I felt mm-hmm. like working out was just one more thing I absolutely had to do. And
it,
you know, right? And so it just became even more overwhelming. I was like, oh my God, I also have to work out,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and so it was about taking a step back and thinking, like you rightly said, like what works for me? Like what little things am I going to do now? You know, and if it's working out once a week, but then also every day taking that time to acknowledge what I've been able to do, if that's what it
yeah.
takes now for the next couple of weeks, and then, you know, as time goes
yeah.
on, I can fit that into my schedule. So the point about, you know, figuring out what works for you as a person, I
mm-hmm.
think is also important.
Mm-hmm. And the beauty in it, I tell people, once you figure out what works for you, you don't owe anyone an explanation. Like, you see what I mean? Because
yeah.
I think, especially now, we are in this place now where, you know, we're so, everything is sort of out there. We're so evasive. People, we sort of feel compelled to let people know everything
yeah.
about it and what we're doing. And everyone has an opinion on what we do and the way in which we should do things. And I tell people, once you find what works for you, you don't need to explain it to anyone, right? Because you know what it's doing to you. So, for example, like I was saying, if I worked with somebody who just, you know, sitting outside and listening to birds chirp, right, would, you know, really sort of settle her. And she would talk to people sometimes and they would like, that's strange. And I'm like, who cares? Really? Like, who cares? If that's what helps you de-stress and it works for you, then it's your thing and it's okay. Right? You don't have to explain. You don't have to apologize for it. And so I think it's really important for people to remember.
Yeah.
To remember that.
Yeah. No, and I guess maybe my last sort of major question around this is also, like, at what point do you think or you decide that you need professional help? So, you know, let's say you're not, you know, how do you go from knowing that, oh, this is just a sad phase, or I'm just panicked because of this, and it's not like actual anxiety or it's not depression, it's just I'm sad.
That's a good question. Very good question. I think I would tell people, you know yourself pretty well, right? You know what your standard is, and once things start to go too far out of what your usual center is, right? Then it's a red flag. One of the first things we look at in psychology is there a sudden or gradual change in things like basic behavior, things like your sleep pattern. Are you all of a sudden sleeping way too much than you usually do? Or are you unable to sleep? Are you suddenly eating way more than you usually do, or eating less? Right? Are you suddenly sort of unable to concentrate or focus, you know, and it's far out from what the norm is for you? Are you suddenly finding, if you're the sort of person who likes to be around people, are you finding all of a sudden you want to be alone a lot more than is usual? All of those things are significant red flags, because for a range of clinically diagnosed illnesses, one of the big things is if it starts to affect your ability to sort of function your daily things that you have to do on a day-to-day basis. If whatever you're experiencing, feeling, thinking about starts to affect your ability to do that, then it's definitely time for you to speak to someone.
Yeah.
And then we also think about sort of like the span of time, right? For example, with depression, we all feel the difference between depression and feeling sad. Feeling sad is an emotion. It's a normal emotion. Yeah. It goes, it comes. If you're sad, it's usually because of something. And then, you know, in a couple of hours or by the next day or a couple of days, we expect that, you know, you're over the sadness. It should go and come. But when it gets into 2 weeks, you know, and you're in this low depressive mood for 2 weeks, going on 3 weeks, sort of coupled with other things like just a lot of interest in things you were typically interested in before, wanting to be by yourself. But the interesting thing also is, especially with things like depression and people who sort of start to have suicidal thoughts, it can also go the other way, right? People who are depressed can seem overly happy.
Yeah.
Right. Right. They can seem really happy. They can seem to be on some high. They're happy all the time. They're feeling great, or they seem to be feeling great. And then they commit suicide, and then people are lost. Like, how did this happen? But I would tell people that it's always compared to a benchmark. And that's why I'm saying if it's far out from what your norm is, what your regular is, then it's a red flag. Because if you aren't typically like this, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're feeling really low for a long period of time, or you're feeling really sort of like high for a long period of time, then it's an issue. So knowing yourself, self-awareness is incredibly important, right? Right. Knowing what triggers you, what sort of gets you into certain moods is really very important in helping you notice, okay, something isn't quite right here.
Yeah.
And I need help.
Yeah. And so then from the perspective of a loved one or, you know, friends, family who are watching from mm-hmm. the outside mm-hmm. in, like, how can you tell that one, someone needs help, and then two, how mm-hmm. do you figure out sort of how to help them? So if I think about mice, because I offered to use myself as a case, if I think about myself, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had periods of true depression, and I also sometimes consider myself as a functioning, depressed person sometimes. So you wouldn't know, right? Like I can go out, I can go to social settings and, you know, be, mm-hmm. have conversations, do all of that and come home and be home for 7 days straight and nobody mm-hmm. would know and, you know, go through whatever it mm-hmm. is that I go through and nobody would know. And so, mm-hmm. and I think that that's what you're alluding into in terms of when people are surprised by, you know, someone commits suicide mm-hmm. all of a sudden and it's like, mm-hmm. whoa, that, you know, the person didn't, at least outwardly, you didn't see mm-hmm. those symptoms. And so it can be hard mm-hmm. on people that are watching, right?
Right.
And so if you're someone sitting on the outside, you know, watching a friend or maybe not knowing, how do you sort of help support people that are going through different sorts of mental health challenges, especially knowing that there's a propensity for people who are entrepreneurs specifically to sort of have some of these issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, especially with what you just talked about. There is something that, you know, we're sort of coming to accept now in the field of psychology as, you know, high-functioning depression.
Right.
There are a lot of people who are depressed but are able to, like you said, go about their day function and not sort of give any indicators of what's going on. And that always makes it very difficult. With what I was talking about before, where there's a definite change in, you know, behavior, that's much easier to spot, right? Because if you know somebody really well and you start to notice things that are not typical for them, you know, that is a red flag if you're a loved one. But if like, you know, you use it as an example, it'd be really hard for people to see. So what I tell people is, especially if you have friends who are doing high stress things, like, you know, trying to start a business.
Right.
Or working in other really high stress environments, check in on them regularly.
Yeah.
Right. Ask them, how are you doing? And not just in like the generic, how are you sort of way, but like take them out once in a while, sit them down if you can, call them, yo, like, how are you doing? This thing you were working on, how is it going? You know, because what that does is it provides an avenue for them to open up if there's something going on. They might be able to then sort of open up and tell you, especially if they're the sort of person who might not be giving us sort of any indication. Because if someone isn't giving us any indication, it really is hard to tell.
Yeah.
And people get really good at being able to put on this mask.
Right.
Go out, get things done, come back, shut the door, put the mask off, and, you know, they're hurting inside. And so just if and especially if you have people who seem like they have it together all the time, we all have those friends, right? And family members who, you know, they're always the ones who are there for everyone. They are solving every problem. They seem to have everything together. Check in on them. Ask them, how are you doing? Mm. You know, where are you with this? Have you been struggling with anything recently? Is there anything I can do for you? Because people are more likely to open up to you when you check in on them.
Yeah.
But I also think I encourage people to sort of have, especially entrepreneurs, to have accountability partners, right? Whether it's a friend who's also an entrepreneur or a friend in some other field, but somebody who regularly checks in on you, who you regularly check in on, to sort of provide that support. But once you sort of do find that a family member or, you know, somebody close to you is struggling with something, you know, it's a hard place to be in, because providing support for somebody with a mental health challenge is extremely difficult. But there are several things that you can do. I always say that if you find that someone close to you is struggling with something, the first thing that I think is important for you to do is to get educated about it.
Mm.
If my brother or sister or friend is struggling with depression. I want to get to know everything I can about it so that I can be the best, you know, support that I can be. So get educated, and then make sure you are taking care of yourself, because it's a draining role to be there for someone who's struggling with, a challenge. Get educated. If you can talk to them about seeking professional help, do. But I always say, take it beyond talking about it, because, or telling them to do it, because we like to throw out, if you're struggling with something, seek help. If you're struggling with something, seek help. And that sounds really good, but the reality, while actually struggling with stuff, you know, sometimes getting out of bed is a chore.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, researching and finding where to go for help, especially in Ghana, where it's so difficult to find where you can go, you know, they're not likely to do it because it's a lot.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, beyond saying, you know, seek help, finding out if it's something they are willing to do, do some of the legwork for them. Research, you know, come up with a couple of, you know, options, and then present it to them and say, you know, I've looked around and there's this person and that person and this person, you know, this might be a good option. Should I set up an appointment for you? Would you like for me to go with you to your first session? There are people who do that. And then so it's sort of like taking those first steps with them to sort of help them get going, if seeking help is an option.
Right.
But if not, so just making sure that you're checking in on them regularly. You're providing a safe space for them to talk. Because the thing with a lot of mental health challenges is people, it's an overwhelming sense of isolation.
Yeah.
Right? And that sort of adds to whatever challenge they're having. And so just being there so that they sort of start to get a sense of, I'm not alone, but providing a safe space where they can open up and talk. If we just need to talk and, you know, you're just there to listen, then that's what it is. The other thing that's really important to remember when it comes to supporting someone with a mental health challenge is that let them take the lead. Sometimes when we're playing that support role, we sort of, especially when we've read up, okay, so, you know, you're struggling with depression, I've read all about this, we should do this, and that. And it might be like, no,
right,
we're not doing that. Right, let them lead. Sometimes there's this thing we call holding space, holding space with someone, which is the idea that you're sort of just stepping into whatever the person has going on, and whatever they need in that moment, you're going to be.
Okay.
So whether it's just sitting there and being there with them, neither of you speaking a word to each other, if that's what they need, then that's what you do. You know, so sort of letting them lead when they know trying to be that. If they don't know what they need and all they want to do is sit and figure out what the next step is, then you do that. But getting educated, making sure you are taking care of yourself, making sure that you're sort of doing some legwork for them in terms of getting help, those kinds of things are really, really very important.
Okay.
And check on your friends. Check on entrepreneur friends. Check on them, man, because it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah. And so I want to wrap up with, if you can think of any resources, and I don't know if your own website has resources that people can go to as they're thinking of, whether it's for themselves or for others, like what are some good, because, you know, the internet has all sorts of things out there. So what are some good resources that you can think of that people can get to that would be helpful on this topic?
Okay. So I have one on my website, which is www.thrivecareghana.com. I have a list of mental health care providers, private, public, organizations that support, you know, victims of abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence, those kinds of things. There's a document put together by an organization that I have up on my website that sort of gives you all that information, their contact information, how you can contact them, which government hospitals have psychologists available, things like that. So at www.thrivecareghana.com, under blog and resources, there's that document available.
Okay.
And And it's amazing because, like I said, it gives both private and public, and then a bunch of other organizations that, you know, provide resources and support. So you can go check it out.
Okay, that sounds great. And where can people find you online on social media? What are your social media handles?
Okay, so for both Instagram and Twitter, it's thrive__gh.
Okay.
So double underscore.
Oh, okay. I remember that. I'll put that in the show notes also so people can just click on it and find it.
Yeah. Okay, for both Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. All right, then quickly we'll do the rapid fire questions and then I'll let you go.
Oh, okay. Should I be scared?
Nah. These are really, really easy. And if you've listened to this before, it's not too crazy. Okay, let's go. Right. Instagram or Twitter? Since you're on social media, Instagram or Twitter? I'm not going to ask you Ghana Jollof or Niger Jollof because that's the place. So I'll ask you. I'll ask you.
And my husband is Nigerian. So
your husband is Nigerian. Okay, then I have to ask you. for the record.
Oh boy, Ghana Jollof, yes. All the way.
Okay. And then coffee or tea?
Coffee. Oh, I'm such a coffee person.
I know. It's terrible. I'm like a coffee addict. It's not even funny. Morning person or night person?
Oh, I'm a night person. I'm not a morning person at all.
I'm a morning person for sure. And then if you could live on one dish for the rest of your life, what would that be?
One what?
One dish. If you could have one meal for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Oh, cake with all the trappings. With pepper and avocado.
I don't remember the last time I had cake. Yeah. Wow.
Everything.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. And then what's your favorite local restaurant?
Buka,
okay. Because they have it's good setting, good vibes. Buka in Accra. Cool. No, I think thank you so much for joining me for this conversation. I think it's an important topic and I think we're able to do some deep dives here and that I hope people find helpful as they sort of pursue their dream, you know, their entrepreneurial dreams, that they don't have to go it alone, that there are resources out there to help them. And it takes a village. Africans say it takes a village. And so not to forget that the rest of that village that's out there to support you. So I think this was great.
Thank you for having me. And one final note, if I may.
Yeah.
If you feel like you need help but you can't afford it, one of the things Thrive Care is doing this year is we're starting an online support, sort of a chat room that offers support for various challenges, and it's absolutely free. You don't have to sign on at the website, but you know, to be facilitated by a mental health professional, either myself or another psychologist, different topics. So stress, things like stress, depression, burnout, things like that. I'll be releasing, you know, my social media handles, just releasing the different dates for the different sessions. So you sign up anonymously, you come online, join a conversation, get some, you know, answers and tips, and, you know, also get to, you know, talk to other people who are struggling with some of the other things. And it's absolutely free.
Great. I follow you on social media, so when I see it come out, definitely will share and tweet out so people can know that that's available. I think that would be a great resource. Thank you, Carol. This was great. Hey guys, thanks for listening to Item 13, an Essence 13 production. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. To keep up to date on news and events from Essence 13, please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Essence and the number 13. Thank you.